For our next speaker, it's former, I believe, Air Force, special operations and special search and rescue expert. He also responded voluntarily to the Oklahoma City bombing, false flag terror operation. You know, just out of his sense of duty, and the day of 9/11, he was not active military, but due to his background, his expertise, he volunteered, like so many others did, and he's got an amazing story to tell. Please welcome Kevin McPadden.
Hello, folks. I don't have the most like precise speech prepared, but I have like these like thoughts that like constantly pound their way into my head, and I just seem to just jot them down and made a little compilation of them. I'll start off by talking a little bit about myself. As Les mentioned, I was deployed to the Oklahoma bombing with the Air Force. I was the second wave of medical response coming out of Shepherd Air Force Base in Wichita Falls, Texas. After all the medics were working 12-hour shifts and they got burnt out about 6-7 days later, we came in to take up the slack. There was nothing compared to 9/11. It was like 9/11's kid brother. The day before 9/11, I was laid off as a network engineer working for Falconwood Corporation, which is based out of the World Trade Center. I felt like, you know, I was going to just sleep in the next day. But, you know, an empty plate on my nightstand and a glass of water vibrated and fell right off. It's like, what the hell is that? This is a New York City earthquake? Wow, I finally got to live through one. No, it was much worse. It was like an earthquake. Came outside. I went to the answer machine. All these like incoherent messages are on air on the answer machine. I was like, "What the hell is going on?" I just heard. Turn on the TV. I turned on the TV, and knew that I had to do something. I ran out of the house, out of the apartment building. There's people crying in the apartment, in the stairwell. People crying out on the street. I was like, "What the hell is going on here?" It was surreal. It was surreal from the start, like immediately. I went to local stores, I got equipment that I could procure, tools, anything that I could put together, food, and I just ran over the Williamsburg Bridge and ran downtown. Actually, I ran to Vesian Church, I believe it was, where I was staging with the Red Cross, and that wound up being like a lot of bureaucracy and nonsense. But even then, they said, hey, you know, like you got to stay behind this line because they're thinking about taking this building down. They're not sure if it's stable or not. So they were holding a line off because they had knowledge that something was going to happen. Well, you know, they pushed us back a little bit. About 15 minutes later, a couple minutes later, they started calming down. They let the border through. People started coming back out into the street. We watched like 5 New York City buses jam-packed with people wanting to do search and rescue, head down there towards Building 7. People walked out into the middle of the street to see these people off, like bon voyage. And right then, Building 7 came down, and it was a stampede. And people were just mowing people over, just trampling. I picked a woman up off the ground, and I thought I maybe touched her the wrong way, and she turned around and took a swing at me. And I said, no, you got to run that way, like run like you never did before. I actually gave her a little kick in the rear. It was like about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 11th. I'm not sure exactly about the time, because I was there for 4.5 days, and all I could really attest to with time is that I woke up 3 times, and everything else was just like full steam ahead. I'd worked by myself over the night on 9/11. Actually found some kids that found some tractor trailers filled with supplies and food and cigarettes, and we passed them out. We unloaded some tugboats. I got frustrated because I have medical training and knowledge, and I wanted to put it to use. And I went around and went to the doctors, got their wish lists. I barged into St. Vincent's Hospital. There was a big friggin' scene, wrestling with the security guards and whatnot. Got called me a drug addict because I was like crazy. And he got pinned up against the wall. And then the nurses gave me the medical supplies. And they were willing and wanting to work. And I was afraid to tell them that, you know, there was nobody really to save. I know from being out in the desert, you know, when you, at night you have to burn, you have to heat up rocks and bury them. And then you make your camp on top of that. And you're heated throughout the night with radiant heat through the ground. And it was just so much radiant heat that you could walk 35 feet off to where the water was and be needing a jacket. And then you could go up to the pile and immediately break out into a sweat. Yeah, that's not jet fuel that burns off 10 hours later. It's not any kind of incinerary or nothing. Nothing was burning. No combustibles. It was chemicals. This was explosives. Well, I worked throughout the night. And in the morning, I was kicked out by FEMA. By like this little, oh man. This guy really made me mad. And I met up with this Russian kid who was just fresh out of EMT training, and he was chock full of gear. And I was like, well, I have some experience, and he's got the equipment. We got to stick together. And we got kicked out together. And he went to use the bathroom inside Manhattan College, and he came out and he said, you're ex-military? Go in there. Well, I went in there. I plead my case. You know, I was like, look, you know, I need to, you know, I'm getting kicked out, and, you know, I still have more work to do here. And they said, okay, fill out this paperwork, which were like waivers. And once I did that, they were like, no, nobody's kicking you out. You're with us. Well, you know, we did a search and rescue. We dug in a pile. But the most, I guess, reverent work that I did was the evacuation of one of the Stuyvesant Towers with from 20 to the 25th floor. You can only see a couple feet in front of your face. Once I was in the building, I was told by Con Ed that the building was coming down, that the gas mains were broken. Well, you know, that kind of spiced it up a bit. And I was bringing, I brought like three, like 250-pound women down 25 flights of stairs and in the smoke. And my fourth patient, I had to give up to a fireman. And, you know, that was a little bit heartbreaking. But anyway, I came out of that building, I collapsed. It was like, you know, it must have been my golden moment. I just wanted, at the time I was smoking cigarettes. I popped a cigarette in my mouth. Who comes walking over to me? Mike Bloomberg. He goes, you know, you think you look cool with that cigarette in your mouth, but you look like a dirtbag. Well, I was like Slupser Slash. I like enraged, I hovered over him. I was like ready to rip his head off. And I was like, it might be your city, but you're in my personal space. And he just went. He just turned around and moseyed off. He knew he had to get out of there. But, you know, surprisingly enough, everybody in the military unit was like, you know, you know, pay him respect. You know, he handed over his checkbook. Yeah. Now he's saying no free lunch. Look, you little weasel. I'm not one of your little computers you're selling. I need repair. If it was one of your little number crunches, you'd have a technician out there in a minute. He says, oh, I can't wait till he's gone. But as my symptoms, I have PTSD, severe, I was told. I have asthma, reactive airway disease. Although Sinai says there's no abnormal findings, other than I have the lungs of a 60-year-old. I'm 30 years old. I say that's abnormal. My lungs have an 85%, or I fell within 85% of their predictions of having an illness. And they say that the average person loses 3% of their lungs every year, and I will lose like 12. Yeah, that's really reassuring. This is a gross miscarriage of justice, and the government and the state are despicable. I wish I could find somebody, a witch doctor or something that could resurrect George Washington so he could crawl out and give Bush a whipping. I mean, even the devil has some control and tact. Our country has been taken over by these nasty corporate giants, and they've seemed to give our government HIV. And us in the truth movement, we're the white blood cells. We're the ones holding it back, suffering from a bad infection. And they're completely suppressing the whole concept of manifest destiny in this corporate takeover. Abe Lincoln stated that we have the right to overthrow this government at any time. Well, you know what? I'm waiting. I hear people talking about suicide and whatnot. Don't. We need you back in your hands. But since the time was near. I got too much to go into, but you'll hear more from me. Thanks, all.